Hey SEOs and content marketers, say goodbye to crazy spreadsheet mashups and experience unprecedented connectivity between your SEO planning and reporting data. Introducing Audience Key, technology for keyword mapping, content brief automation, and rank tracking that form an SEO strategy system providing unparalleled feedback loops between planning, reporting, and optimization activities. Put your time and energy into strategy, not data upkeep. Visit audiencekey.com and apply for a free trial today.
Hey everyone, welcome to Web Culture here on WMR. It's the 6th of November, 2025. And this is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media, Christine Schackinger from Sites Without Walls. Christine, it's November the 6th, 2025. I can't believe that.
First, hi everybody. I know this year's gone so fast. I'm crazy.
Yeah, it is Christmas season. Black Friday and Cyber Monday are literally 2 weeks away. You know what? It is never too late to get ready. It's probably too late to do a full audit of your website and to take action on the findings of that audit, because the audit is going to take longer than 2 weeks. But it's not too late to improve the usability of pages, to have clearer product copy, to provide better internal links to connect related products to each other. There's got to be some little things you can do to improve your websites. Actually, now's the time to do that.
It's also a great time to get an audit, because you'll be ready for the new year to just get rolling, and your people will mostly be on vacation, so you won't be in anyone's way.
Well, indeed, but if we were talking actionable items before this year's Christmas season, we're kind of missing the boat on that. It's a little late for that. So, you know what? Immediately after Cyber Monday, on the OMG Tuesday, that's the time to get an audit going on your website.
Yeah, definitely.
That's the best time to do it. Because, and honestly, give a techie something to do over the lonely Christmas holidays, eh? Because everything stops dead on the 15th of December. Then we all sort of sit here wondering what we're supposed to do all day, because it's not like any of us have lives or know what we read or do anything in the real world, right? Okay, before moving any further, I want to thank Audience Key and Wix Studio. Yes. These are our two sponsors. And like all software developers, for people in the tech world, these people will help you move the little mountains you need to move to get through your day. Check them out, Audience Key and Wix Studio.
I just want to add one thing, because Audience Key has that new feature. It's really good this time of year. It's a product grid tracking. So you can track where your products appear in the product grid. If they disappear, you'll know it. And if they're doing well, you'll know that too. So it's a really excellent feature of Audience Key.
Check these guys out, and please don't be afraid to say that we sent you. So it's been a busy week. We have a huge array of stories, including a couple of stories coming from the abyss. But the beginning, it's a couple changes in the tech world, a couple announcements out of the way. Google is adding a Chrome Web Store user agent. Basically, this is going to help you know the agents crawling your site. So when you see this come up in your logs, Google-CWS, that's Google's new Chrome Web Store user agent. It's a user-triggered fetcher, so you tell it to go get something, it's going to go get something for you. Now, when it comes up in your logs, Google-CWS, that's what that is.
Yep, nothing to add to that.
ongoing Google Search Console API, bugs are impacting the search appearance feature. So when you're in Google Console and you see search appearance, what kind of Google search did the website appear under? In API, there's a bug that is screwing up some of the values of the search appearance dimension. What's happening there, Christine?
It's mostly when you apply not contains or not equals to. The API only returns rows, but search appearance is the value. Like, it doesn't explain any of it.
So when you start adding filters and stuff, it's not actually.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. This is on Search Engine Roundtable, very short. You want to guess how long this bug's been in effect, though?
Oh my God. I just saw the show note. Are you kidding? Since April. Are you kidding
since
me?
Since April. Yeah. So it's still not fixed. So if you're aware of it and you're waiting for the fix is still not here.
Well, you know, we sounded also smart until about a second ago. I had no idea till since April.
Yeah, since April. But apparently it came up again this week. So
Google's ad editor version 2.11 now available. It's got 15 new features and a couple old features that have gone away. Over at SE Roundtable, there's an entire list of the 15 features and a short explanation for each one of them. And there's also a little eulogy for the two other features that got taken away. We're not going to go through the whole feature list.
Just a couple of the new ones are campaign level negative keyword list to Performance Max, search term report for Performance Max, scheduled link checks, account level placement and IP exclusions, campaign selection and download dialogue enhancements, blah, 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 blah. So make an editable lead forms is probably what it's pretty helpful to people. So
I got another announcement I want to throw in here that didn't make our show list. One of my favorite site crawlers is Sitebulb. We've had Sitebulb guys on a couple of times. Christy, you turned me onto Sitebulb like 5 years ago, and I've loved it ever since. And the most recent version of Sitebulb has a bug in it. And so this happened to me the other day. It happened to me on Monday morning. I had this report that I had to get written. It was actually supposed to be a month-end report in October, but as you might notice, Monday was the beginning of November, but I had to get this damn report done, and it was late, and I hate missing deadlines. Like, I got really neurotic about that. And so I opened Sitebulb to get all my information, and the moment I open it, it opens. I get my welcome screen, and the whole software just crashes. This is after downloading the newest, after being prompted to download the new version. I'm like, well, I should do that. Okay. So I download a new version, install it. It immediately crashes. I panic. I get in touch with the Sitebulb people. And, you know, the cool thing about them is they got amazing customer support. So, like, 10 minutes later, they're back in touch with me.
Yeah.
Took them about a half hour to figure out that me and, I don't know, just about everybody else they were talking to that morning had a problem. And it was all the same problem. 15 minutes later, they had a patch made, downloaded, and it worked again. So, this morning, they sent a letter out to all of their customers saying, get the 0.1 version. Let me just pull up that email myself so I can make sure I'm telling it correctly. Get the version 0.9, 9.0 will crash on you, on some people. Version 9.1 will be solid for everyone. So download version 9.1. If you see it crash on you from 9.0, it's not you, it's them. They got a patch for it. It's fixed.
That's great. You know, they're so awesome that one night I was trying to crawl a site so large it broke the software. And so I told them, and they wrote me a special version of the Sitebulb so that I could crawl the site. Now, don't think everybody is going to get that opportunity, but they are that nice of people. So
yeah, they're good people. If you really clearly good. Explain the problem to them and they look at their software and say, oh yeah, you know what, that's actually a problem,
and they will fast.
Move heaven and earth to fix it.
Yeah, and they're fast to fix things. So.
Okay, so as I am unfortunate to have to say, I don't know, at least once a week, one of the interesting things about doing this show is we get a front row view on technology, the good, the bad, the ugly, and the turning fascist. And it's our job to cover technology. And this is an historic time. America is undergoing yet another revolution, this one. One I'm personally not so happy about, but this revolution is 100% fueled by the tech world. And it's our job to cover stories from tech, thus stories from the abyss. Google and Bing are indexing Grokopedia, the AI-generated version, or the AI-generated online encyclopedia started by Elon Musk and Grok. Now, regular listeners might remember that Grok was at one time probably the most honest of the LLMs when it came to asking a political opinion, getting an honest answer. And that really ticked off Elon Musk, and so he changed it. And now it's highly, highly, highly right-wing bias. So this is Grokopedia. So, sorry, Christine?
No, go ahead.
Well, Wikipedia has been... Wikipedia has had a number of evolutions over its time. It was highly untrusted when it started, but now I think it's probably one of the most trusted sources of information on the web. And it's definitely the largest crowdsourced project on the web. It's being directly threatened by Grokopedia, especially since Google and Bing are likely to use Grokopedia pages in their result sets now.
Well, apparently it's fairly low. Bing has 400 pages as far as someone could tell, and Google didn't have a lot more at, because there's 800,000 AI generated pages in Grok. Mm-hmm. Glenn Gabby was citing the article of Barry Schwartz on SEO Roundtable. You know, also had an interesting point. There have been sites that have been given manual actions for AI generated content, and AI generated content has caused sites to be devaluated. We're sure that's probably along with other factors, not just AI content, but the manual actions were definitely because of AI content. So for Google to index this, also, as you said, I use X, and when he announced that he was launching the retrained version, it now does put out a lot of incorrect information based on disinformation that's put out by right-wing channels. So it's unfortunate. Hopefully people don't flock to it. Old Grokopedia, I think, was so good because it trained on a lot of content from academics and researchers and journalists and, you know, authors and things like that. But he added a whole lot of propaganda training, which you can see in when you're actually using X, when people call Grok to answer questions. So I guess we'll see what happens, but it is definitely a story from the abyss, because Wikipedia is like hand edited, may not always be correct, but boy, you have to really go through some hoops to get something in there. And this is just whatever he throws into the training is what it will be spitting out. So.
Okay. Okay. So Sam Altman says he would be ashamed if OpenAI weren't the first.
We have one more story from the abyss. You just
that was written in 2020.
Oh, it was. Oh, it was in the thing today. Okay, I apologize. It was in the news today. Sorry.
As it turned out, Facebook didn't remove the QAnon conspiracy theory. And we are where we are today.
It was a story about removing QAnon articles from Facebook, but apparently somehow got into today's news, and it's not recent. You know what it was, Jim? It was posted by Daily Beast, which posted it from another site, which posted it from Reuters. So apparently by the time you got to the original article, it was old.
This is likely in reaction to Marjorie Taylor Greene, U.S. Senator, saying she no longer believes the QAnon theory. That's likely why this came up in news feeds today. Gotcha. Anyway, moving along, Sam Altman says he would be ashamed if OpenAI wasn't the first company to be run by an AI CEO after he cashes his stock options.
Exactly. Of course.
So, you know what? I've been saying this for a while. I don't really see AI replacing people in the sales department, for instance, because that's a lot of personal relationships. And I really don't see AI replacing like the senior devs, because they're the ones who are there to, you know, sort of like smooth out all the bad vibes and bad vibe coding. But CEOs, I mean, they just play with numbers and do projections and come up with analysis and think, hey, maybe we should do this direction. And if I'm not, don't miss my guess, CEOs often tend to be hallucinating, at least, you know, micro hallucinating anyway, and are often wrong. Yeah, why can't they be replaced by AI, Christine?
So many reasons, because that's not the only thing a CEO does. And if it's a good CEO, they lead their people. If they're not a great CEO, that's a different thing. But the whole direction of companies, especially ones that are on the stock market run by AI that's built on a faulty foundation of predictive text that's often wrong, I would not work for that company. Would you work for that company? Like, my future is based on an AI CEO that,
honestly,
it's just gross, really. It's a gross idea.
Maybe, maybe not. Honestly, I don't know if it's a bad idea or a good idea. I'd like to see the performance before making a judgment. I've seen a number of human-run companies run into the dirt.
That's very true.
The vast majority of human-run companies end up in the dirt. That's just the business cycle. 9 out of 10 businesses still go out of business.
That's always how it's been since the dawn of business.
So again, I don't see why AI CEO would be such a terrible thing.
I honestly don't think
that the outcomes could be terribly different. I've seen CEOs treat people horribly, and I've seen wonderful people in.
So if it's trained badly and it decides just to fire all the people who have purple hair because it decided purple hair is a bad thing, and you have nowhere to go with that because it's a bot.
You do have somewhere to go with that. You can go to law. You can go to HR. You can go to a whole bunch.
You can't sue. It's a human. It's not a human.
You don't sue a CEO. You sue the organization the CEO works for.
Let's move forward. Okay. This is a really dumb idea,
I don't think it's a terrible idea at all. I think it's a smart idea, and I think we should get rid of as many C-level people and replace them with AI immediately, especially if they're prone on replacing actual workers with AI. I say hit the C-levels first. Microsoft is warning that an OpenAI API is being abused as a backdoor for espionage.
Yes, it's a little different than our normal stories that we've been covering about AI being like a risk for you to use, like the browsers and the connectors and the agents. This is about from Microsoft Detection and Response Team DART. This is an article in Mashable that they're actually able to, threat actor can get into a backdoor through OpenAI, and then it can communicate and orchestrate malicious activities within the compromised environment, but it can get around all detection, so it won't be seen. And it relies on things like fetch commands to do what it needs to do. So it could actually just sit there, evade your detection and your threat detection systems, and wind up with something that's just sitting on your servers reporting back to someone everything that's going on that it sees.
Okay, so these are
assistant APIs, by the way. This is from Assistant ABI, the API that lets OpenAI's enterprise clients build assistants within their own app. So if you're using this is the vulnerability point.
Yeah, and so to be clear, this is not an actual vulnerability or misconfiguration. They're not saying that there is a specific incidence of this happening, although I'm pretty sure by saying this, they know that there are specific incidents. They're not pointing out to any one of them, but they are saying this is a way to misuse a built-in capacity, a built-in capability of the OpenAI Assistance API. They know the problem could exist, and they're assuming that it does exist because they know it could.
Yeah,
if it's in your organization, is probably vulnerable.
They're calling it the Sesame Ob backdoor. So you can read a full list of recommendations from the Microsoft Incident Response Team on Microsoft website. Some of the suggestions include audit and review firewalls and web server logs frequently, review and configure your perimeter firewall and proxy settings to limit unauthorized access to services, including connections through non-standard ports. Again, these are OpenAI assistants, which means you're giving them permission to access things on computers. This is supposed to be deprecated next year. So they said it might be better to move to something called the Responses API. But if you have this, if you're entertaining using agentic AI from Assistance API at OpenAI, you want to be very careful about this opening or leaving inside your company.
Okay. A mind captioning AI is able to decode human brain activity and turn thoughts into text, according to Alex Huth, a neuroscientist at the University of California, Berkeley. The model predicts what a person is looking at with a lot of detail. How much detail that can be gotten.
So what they did is they took a lot of video, and then they mapped people's brains, and then they detected the patterns to what somebody was looking at the time that the brain emitted certain signals. And so they were able to use that to more reliably detect what someone might be looking at. So it's very interesting stuff. It's a little scary, but it is very interesting. Apparently it's very accurate. Not very, very accurate compared to previous models. And the method was used to a deep learning language AI model to analyze the text captions in more than 2,000 videos, turning each one into a unique numerical meaning signature. A separate AI tool was then trained on 6 participants' brain scans and learned to find the brain activity patterns that matched each meaning signature while the participants watched the video. And this scientist has a Twitter thread on this, which is really interesting. If you go to his feed and check it out, and he talks about it with more imaging than the article. The article itself is from Nature. So mind captioning AI decodes brain activity to turn thoughts into text.
Okay. And by the way, this was conducted at the NTT Communications Science Laboratory in Kanagawa, Japan.
Yeah.
Okay. Amazon has sued Perplexity as the AI browser war escalates and gets bigger. It's actually now Amazon's gone to the courts. They sent an initial cease and desist that apparently didn't work, according to Reuters. Amazon says Perplexity continues to unleash the Comet AI browser on the site without Amazon's permission, despite Amazon requesting over and over again for it to stop. Perplexity's misconduct must end, says Amazon. Perplexity is not allowed to go where it has been expressly told it cannot. That Perplexity trespass involves code rather than lockpit, making it, and that it involves code rather than a lockpit makes it no less unlawful. Oh my God, the hypocrisy of these people. Okay, anyway.
I know. So the thing is, it also works without you, like, if you, let's say I'm logged into my, we've talked about this before with the AI browsers, how when you're logged into something, the agent has access. Mm-hmm. So if I'm logged into my Amazon already, it can go ahead and go shopping without logging in, and it can use the card that's on file to make the purchase. So Amazon is like, yeah, no. And I think that's probably, they don't really explain why Amazon, except it's, you know, so angry about it, other than it's against their, you know, terms of service. But I would imagine Amazon's worried about these things, making purchases that they weren't authorized to make, and then they would have to deal with that situation. So, as you said, they're telling them no. Perplexity claims Amazon is trying to make life worse and argues that e-commerce giants shouldn't forget what it's like to be our size and passionate about a world-changing product. I was like, yeah, whatever. So it's designed to be safe, but as we know, this is from them, is that the prompt injection attacks are not really defendable. They don't really know how to stop them. So it'd be very easy if you're using this browser and someone sent you something, hidden text in it, let's say an email, to have it go find that you have Amazon open and go make a purchase. So I don't know if they could change where it's going to, but I do know that they could make it. So
how do you defend a trust mark if you can't trust the people who are issuing the trust mark? The Motion Picture Association of America are the people who decide how a movie should be rated, whether it's rated R, rated PG-13, rated PG, rated G, or whatever, right? So that's a trust mark, and that trust mark belongs to the Motion Picture Association. They're the ones who are charged with deciding what trust mark to put on the film, whether this is a PG-13, a rated R, or whatever. Now, that's a registered trademark. They own that. But it's also just part of the way we talk, the way we think, the way we, you know, rate things in our own minds, right? And so Meta Corporation, Facebook and Instagram have come along, and they've applied the PG-13 or rated R or whatever mark to reels or to short videos that are appearing on Meta or on Instagram. The thing is, they don't necessarily follow the MPA's guidelines, and incidentally, they're not the MPA. They don't have a right to assign this designation.
Right, and the MPA is saying that, this is from Mashable, any dissatisfaction with Meta's automated classification, because it is done by AI, will inevitably cause the public to question the integrity of MPA's rating system, the MPA wrote. In fact, this is one of the key reasons that the MPA declined an earlier request by one of Instagram's competitors for permission to use the rating on the platform. So I do kind of agree with that, though. You know, they've spent many years developing this system for ratings. And although I'm older and I don't have kids, so it doesn't really matter to me as much. If you do have, you know, children or teenagers, you probably want to know if it's a PG, PG-13, R, you know. So I think that they have a valid point here, but they're using it without permission, and they're using it like it's a rating system when it's not. Just develop your own rating system.
Yeah, I'm absolutely not going to debate the efficacy of the Motion Picture Association's rating system itself.
No.
But I am going to defend that it belongs to them, that it is their system, that it's universally, or at least in the United States and in North America, the accepted standard to decide what content is what content, you know, what level of racist violence or whatever standard, and to just use it as if it didn't really mean anything, that devalues the meaning of everything. And so it must be defended.
Yeah, I agree. And also Meta, Instagram, Facebook, that's where they're using it. That's all done by AI, and the MPAA argues that, you know, theirs is a very specific system where, you know, the movies are actually watched and give ratings, you know. So it's a very different application and use of it. So 100% agree. I think the MPAA is in the right here.
Okay, so from the they may well be. We'll see how this turns out. This should infuriate you.
Yes.
Meta has internally projected that it would earn about 10% of its annual overall revenue, about $16 billion, from bullshit, from fake ads, from scams, banned goods, or you know, pyramid schemes, Ponzi schemes, whatever. The fake ads that you see in Reels and up on Facebook or on Instagram, Meta not only knows about them, but it knows how much money it's making from them.
Yeah, it's kind of just overall Meta's direction in the last couple months is like, we don't hide anything we're doing now. We don't care. So this is another thing at Meta, where, as you said, they know that it's $15-16 billion a year off of the highest risk scam advertisements. And they show very clear signs of being fraudulent, and Meta doesn't care. So that's very unfortunate. So, but this is a massive industry. There is a group, I didn't put the article in the grid, Jim, because there wasn't really any details. There is a group, the former Meta employees, who are trying to come up with methods to combat this and the making revenue off of it. But $16 billion a year, that's a lot of money that they're making off something they could probably at least greatly reduce. Probably not completely stop, but at least greatly reduce. Because people are getting hurt off those ads.
Oh, absolutely. They're scams. Yeah. People are being defrauded, or people are being sent bad information. People are being sold bad courses. People are being involved in Ponzi schemes.
Yeah.
So that Mark Zuckerberg can, I don't know, buy the entire island of Kauai or something.
It says, according to internal Meta review from April, it says they said to themselves, it is easier to advertise scams on Meta platforms and Google. So it's also put restrictions on how much it's willing to lose of the money that it gains from these scam ads. Oh, it's just so, I need a shower. Every time I read a Meta story now, it's like, I need a shower afterward. It's like, we know it's scamming. We know it's wrong. We know people are getting hurt, but we'll only lose this much money trying to stop it.
Yeah. So online ads are annoying, and they're intrusive. They often come from your mobile device or your computer device, following and tracking your every move, which in and of itself should be awfully creepy. But you know what really gets people mad? When they can't close them. Like when they just can't. Yes. Like, so can, just, how do they get to them? The invasive process of scanning every bit of your life isn't nearly as bad as not being able to close the ad. But we digress. So YouTube has locked a sidebar on mobile ads, removing the option for people to close the ad. So A, your video screen's got a little bit smaller. You can't see the video as well. And B, you can't close the damn ad.
Yeah, that's just rude. I will tell you, if you're running these kind of ads on your website and people cannot close the ad, you might start losing users. There are sites I don't go to anymore because of the ads on of ads that you use on the site. So, but yeah, this is terrible. This like because I close these all the time. This is on mobile. So you already have a little bit of screen anyways, let alone now you have this massive ad sticking there and you can't get rid of it. So.
Okay. So Gemini is, AI is everywhere. AI is now coming into Google Maps, directions, traffic, and places. You know, in many ways, I think this is actually probably very, very good for Google Maps. It will make them, it'll give them more utility and easier to use. And, I think this is just probably good. It'll help point out locations, places via Google Lens. So you have it in your viewport, click it up in Google Lens, it'll tell you where you are.
Yep, it'll do also look proactive traffic notifications, landmarks for navigation, and will power the assistant in Maps. But Maps has gotten so bad, I can't even use it anymore. It's like, if you try to tap on something, it blows up to like, it's so big, right? And then you can't shrink it, you can't refresh it, you can't get out of it. It's just, it's not very user-friendly anymore, so I don't know if these will help or hurt. This is such a difficult product to use at this point.
I think it'll help. I think it'll help quite a bit. For instance, I love this landmarks for navigation. Up here, you'll hear a nice computerized voice say, in 200 meters, turn left. Well, okay, but how about at the large water tower, turn left? I don't know how long 200 meters is. I don't know how long 200 feet is. I know where that large water tower is. It's just over there. That's pretty cool. And also, I mean, just to the level that Google knows our individual streets and where we are, Google is now going to power the assistant in Google Maps. So if you want to, say, program lengthy driving instructions, it'll give this to you in like a hackneyed accent if you want.
It sounds good. I'm just saying that Maps has become so unusable. I don't know if adding more stuff to it is going to make it worse. So the individual items sound like they'd be very helpful. But as I said, Maps is just not, at this point, it's not usable for me on my phone. I can't do anything with it. I try to touch an icon and it blows up. I can't get to anything. And then it also adds a whole bunch of stuff I don't need when I'm trying to look for the place I'm going, like hotels and restaurants. I'm like, great, I'm in Vegas. There's like 5,000 of these and I don't need them on my map. So it's just stuff like that. So we'll see. It does sound like generally a good idea. And we'll just see if it implements well.
Google is testing a new version of AI mode. They want as much feedback on the new version as possible. They're going to ask which version, which response you preferred. So it's going to show two different AI mode responses side by side and ask you which you like better.
Yeah.
That's going to be interesting.
It is. I guess I'm not really sure the reason for it, except that they're just trying to see what people respond to better. It says it's two different versions. It's two different versions of what they write, but it's not two different versions of layout or anything. So not really understanding how it's a different AI mode.
But, you know what? We'll have to see how different the write-ups are, the gender responses are. And that's probably where the devil's in that detail, I'm sure.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess we'll see what they're testing. You and I are probably both going to test this. So we'll see what they're actually testing when we do the interaction.
It could well be that they're testing this. Robbie Stein from Google has announced three new agentic capabilities with an AI mode: booking event tickets, booking beauty appointments, and wellness appointments, and I guess booking for wellness appointments. So maybe they're testing one AI mode, just informational, here's the facts, Jack, all that sort of stuff. The other one that'll actually go out and do stuff for you.
Well, the image doesn't show that. I think they're separate things. But these agents that can do things for you. Again, be careful. As we said, there's so many issues with these. But you can ask it to help you find concert tickets in New York City, let's say, and it'll come back with pricing and a link to those tickets. Again, I prefer my own brain to find that information, but if that's something you would find helpful, it's worth testing.
Okay. In a report from Will Reynolds, Seer Interactive, users are clicking less. It Even when an AI overview or AI mode doesn't appear in the search result, users are still clicking less. Click-through rates are continuing to decline. In fact, according to Seer, they fell 41% in the last couple of months.
On informational queries, they fell 61% since mid-24, and paid CTRs plunged 68%. Even queries without AI overviews, organic CTRs fell 41%, which you just said, and they apparently clicking less everywhere. I'm not really sure if there's a determination on why that is, just that the existence of the AI overviews and the LLMs have caused a reduction in clicks no matter what.
So. I think it's a new way at looking at getting information. People will consult. You know how people used to go from they do a Google search and they do a Bing search just to see if the Google results were good? I think people are doing that with LLMs now. I think people are like literally, and this is happening with greater frequency. And after you've verified it two or three times, they're pretty sure about the information they're reading. A search may have gotten them where they were going faster, but they don't do that anymore. Now, this for what it's worth, this comes from just over 3,000 queries, over 42 different organizations, and there was about 25 million organic and 1.5 million paid impressions between June 2024 and September 2025. That's what they studied. So, and that's a very wide time period in which the AI world changed radically. Sounds pretty representative, though. I mean, if you look back like a year ago, it was only 6 months ago that AI mode was like solidified in search results, eh? So it's a pretty good cross section.
And those drops could be related to just the existence of AI. Like the change being so dramatic.
It would be really cool to see them repeat this study again next year and to get comparative data that way. But in a year, that's a huge difference.
Very much so. Also, by the way, to give credit, this is in Search Engine Land, this article. So people can look it up. There's also a nice chart in here that shows you the differences between the CTRs versus paid and organic. When it's shown and when it's not. Yeah, it's shown when it doesn't exist.
Brand mention boosts AI search rankings according to Ahrefs.
This is kind of like a, because it's what it trains on, right? So if it sees you more, you'll be the more likely answer in a predictive probability text model. So, but it's good to see someone actually do the research on it. So Ahrefs, showing that brand mentions on third-party websites help improve visibility across AI search surfaces, and they found brand mentions tend to correlate strongly with ranking better. There's no such thing as rank, so I'm gonna eek on that word. But in AI search, indicating that off-page SEO is very important. It's always been very important, brand, but it's just more important now because you have to get your name out there to be trained on if you want it to show up in the large language models.
Okay, this is kind of cool. Kevin Indig, he's emerged as one of the primary researchers in SEO at this time. I think you can pretty much trust the data that Kevin comes up with. And in this case, Kevin is looking at his audience and saying, "I was wrong." He's eating his words from last year, because last year at the rate of growth of people searching and getting referrals from large language models, Kevin predicted that by 2027, 50% of organic search would be dead. But he's since discovered that referral traffic in business-to-business sites, while it might have grown 65% since January, it's dropped 42.6% if you look at the numbers since July. So there was a upward spike, and now there's a slow downwards trend when it comes to traffic referrals from LLMs. This might dovetail in with what Will was saying over at C Interactive a couple stories ago, but That's very interesting. The rate of growth is not only peaked, but it seems to be not only slowing, but dropping.
It goes along with other stories we've been going over the last few months, though, that the large language models aren't increasing, the referrals are slowing, and really the reason to focus on them at all is just to make sure that you are seen in them when people get answers, but they don't refer traffic, and it seems like that's even getting worse. So
Google is removing more search features, including practice problems, nutrition facts, nearby offers, and a few others, because no one uses them. Google spends a great deal of time and staff effort supporting services that a relatively tiny number of users actually use. So starting in January 2026, they're going to remove support for structured data types, again, over a number of features. Check out Search Engine Land, Google, to remove more search features, and that lists through the various features that are going away. Unfortunately, Google doesn't talk about giving back after taking away some stuff, but you may have to remove unsupported structured data code from your web pages. Okay, so I just got a list. The Today Google Box, Nutrition Fact, Nearby Offers and Events, like a local bike share station status, and a TV season selector are being removed. So if your websites are, supporting structured data around those topics, you may have to change your website as of January. So Google Merchant Center is now letting brands upload map and video assets and tracking them in the creative content section.
Yeah, they'll be adding them to the creative assets for people's Merchant Center feeds. Oh, it should be helpful. I'm pretty sure it's a very welcome addition.
Yep. If you're driving traffic using these short form videos, it's good to know what videos where, but all the stuff around them. Google's Merchant Center is also adding promotions for top performing products.
Yeah, this lets you promote your best performing products in Google Shopping and Google Search. So you're allowed to focus on those as opposed to kind of just being whatever. So that'll be really welcome, especially coming into the holiday season. So
this is a kind of weird one. I've been using in images. I've been doing a lot of political work recently, and so I've been taking a lot of pictures of politicians and crowds, and I've been using AI modes to, what's Google's image? I'm trying to remember the Google feature that Google Lens, to point out different landmarks in the city, rather than having to go look up the official name. It's just much, much faster using Google Lens, and it tells me immediately standing in front of XYZ building. Google Lens allows you to crop the photo that you're looking at, so only the specific image that you are interested in will be searched through Google and give a response to it. Well, Google is now smart cropping and maybe trimming your shopping ad images. And again, this reminded me a lot of the Google Lens feature that lets you crop it yourself. What if it cropped the wrong thing? It got the wrong feature, got the wrong product, got the wrong part of the product feature. See, the problem with smart cropping is it's doing it automatically, and you need to turn it off in Google Merchant Center. There's a toggle switch. You should likely toggle it off lest it get it wrong.
You can't turn it off. Only they can turn it off. You have to contact your Google rep.
Oh my goodness. Okay. I thought there was an off switch.
No, there's no off switch.
Well, if your shopping ads look wrong, it could be smart cropping. And I appreciate the correction. Contact your Google rep.
So Google Ads, I don't know why this is something they had to say, but Google has updated circumventing systems policy when you're getting a new section for advertiser verification. Providing false or fraudulent information as part of our advertiser verification program is not allowed. There's a long bunch of little tidbits here at Search Engine Roundtable, but basically don't do it or you could lose your account. Seems pretty straightforward. You're supposed, don't give it fake documents, don't give it fake images, don't whatever it's asking for verification as an advertiser, you must give it those things and they all must be legit. So
yeah, and I just had a new client who is just getting signed up for all of their Google services. And Google has asked them for so many different means of verification, including a video where they actually had to video out front of the of their brick and mortar location. And then they had to video their staff to prove there was actually staff inside the brick and mortar location.
Yeah, and they're very strict.
Oh yeah, so they wrote me this panicked email. Oh my God, Google wants this. Google thinks we're scamming them. Blah, 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 blah. And I'm trying to write back, look, this is just Google's modus operandi. Because you're a small business, they're about to afford you a million and one benefits, a whole bunch of tools that you're able to use that people who are not small businesses don't get to use. So they want to verify you are who they say you are, or who you say you are.
And also some, especially in local, this is outside of ads, but in local services, like, it might have been ads too, but business profiles as well. Things like Locksmith were so laden with fraud and scams that they had to lock that entire category. Nobody could get into it for it was about 2 or 3 years. But I couldn't figure out how to make sure people were who they said they were. And this is the outcome of that kind of fraud action. Because what would happen is someone would put in an ad making it look like it was one person and give a number that would redirect to the scammer who would show up like as a locksmith and charge you $500 to get your car unlocked or something of that nature. So this is just to prevent that. And it does. When I went to look for a locksmith about 8 months ago, it was really nice to see these Google certified businesses because Google also at the time guaranteed you get a refund if you were taken. And it felt good because it was like, oh, I know that Google has checked out this business thoroughly and they were great. And it was an awesome locksmith. So I appreciate this function that they've added.
Yeah. The point of the story was don't be intimidated by the Google request. Comply with the Google request. They're going, if you are who you say you are, it's just a formality, but it's a formality they got to go through.
Yeah. And it will help your business because people will know they can trust you when they see you.
Yeah. Okay. So Google is testing the endless infinite scroll on Discover.
Yeah.
That's probably okay, except that it'll just keep you doom scrolling upwards on Discover all afternoon long.
Yeah, Discover is a correct use for infinite scroll. There's a very limited number of use cases when it comes to user interface design where you should use it. But apparently, according to Barry, this one scrolls literally infinitely. Someone actually timed themselves, Barry reported on in the article, at least 2 minutes of scrolling before.
And they ran out.
Yeah.
Oh, they found the bottom.
No, they didn't.
Oh, okay. There you go. Their thumb just got tired.
Yeah, their thumb got tired. Yeah. But you know, for me, I actually start to physically feel tired when I'm scrolling and it never ends and there's no bottom. Like, I'm just like, oh, come on. Where's the end? Which is often the problem with infinite scroll. Though on Discover, because you're just discovering stuff, it's not a wrong case, but it does seem like a little excessive to scroll for 2 minutes and not hit bottom. So.
But honest to goodness, there is this bizarre psychological need to finish what you started.
Exactly. And at bottom of the page helps me do that.
And they know that. They're very aware of that. And they're exploiting it. This is why I hate those damn reels, because they never stop.
Yeah, exactly. And it just starts to make me feel physically tired when there's no seeming end to the information. So
this is probably, in a weird way, I'm going to think it's a good thing. Google is testing a tinted colored background for search results. And I'll tell you why I think it's good. because it takes so much energy to produce the white background. That's just bright light, wasted light. So if you have a dark background, your monitor uses less energy. So I'm hoping that Google is doing this so that at scale, there will be less energy used.
Those light colors like that, it's a light peachy pea yellow or something.
It might be the most aesthetically pleasing color.
It makes me sad. It literally makes me sad. It's like when I get those filters on your computer, like take out the blue light and everything turns yellow. I'm like, yuck. So I don't know why. It may just be me. But I understand your feeling on the white, though. It could be why they're doing it for sure.
Well, again, that's the only reason I could think of them doing it. Why else would you change something that works? Again, just to save energy. So Google is testing replacing the definitions box in search results with AI overviews. I don't know if that's a good idea or not.
Visually, I don't like it. If I'm looking for a word, I just want the word and the quick answer. And with this, you get a typical AI overview with an opening paragraph, all these definitions, examples. And if you click more, it's going to send you to AI mode. I don't need all that. If I want to click more, plus why hurt the dictionary sites? I mean, come on, leave them alone. Let them get their traffic. But anyway, if I want more, I just go to the sites normally, but I don't know. It's just too much. It's too much information, I think, but people might like it.
Okay. I don't like it. I like having definitions, whatever.
Yeah, no, same here. I just like that definition. This is like overkill. It's like, here's a paragraph about it. Here's the words in sentences. Here's the synonyms. Here's the antonyms. I go to the dictionary site if I need that. Right now, I just want the definition of the word. Or maybe to hear how it sounds. Because I've read it a bunch of times, but I actually don't know how to say it. So unfortunately, we have no end story this week.
Nothing fun, stupid, or funny?
No. I didn't find any funny stories this week, unfortunately. I usually look for them.
I'm afraid I can't draw one off the top of my head. Usually I can, because the world is just so dumb out there. There's just so many dumb things that happen out there.
Usually there's some goofy stuff going on, but no, I couldn't find any goofy stories this week. So,
It has been a particularly rough week, a particularly heady week at any rate. So we gone full circle. You know what? To the delight of our ever suffering producer and engineer Ricky, we're early today. So on behalf of Christine Jackinger from Sites Without Walls, this is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media. You have been listening to Webcology recorded live to podcast, actually on a Thursday, on Thursday the 6th of November 2025. You know what? Like this show. Share it with your friends. Pass it around like you would at a campfire. Like yourselves. And be well. Be kind to each other. Rank well. And we'll talk to you next week.
Bye, everybody.